It's the Popmatic Podcast for October 12th, 2016.
At first they've corn, they best take it first and leave it again. And they put it in corn. At first they put it in corn, they shrimp peas.
It's the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Jeremy, and joining me today are...
Amanda.
Sarah.
Clem Marie.
Chef Mike.
Bill.
October keeps rolling along, and we're talking about it still. This time, the wheels are attached to a food truck. Hooray!
Hey, $15 for a French fry.
45 minutes from now, you'll get food.
But, that's right. Yeah. But you don't have to stand in line in the sun or suffer through millennials and tank tops talking about their gluten sensitivities. No, it's just us old fogies talking about when the McDonald's dollar menu was the menu. There's food in this room, and I skipped breakfast today, so let's get the show on the road.
Word.
Amanda,
yes,
what do you have to fill our guts back up now after we've spilled them?
Okay, so to go on a quest is, according to most fictional histories, a very noble way to spend your time. So some people search for the Fountain of Youth, some look for a mystical cup and a weird magician named Tim. But for the last bit of time, I have been on the quest to find the best bread recipe. Ooh. Now, this may sound simple because it's just, you know, bread, right? But it's really taken me quite a bit of time and many, many, shall we say, questionable loaves. So I think I have found the object of my quest, though. So James Beard was an American culinary megastar. He was a contemporary of Julia Child, and he was one of, if not the first, celebrity TV chef. He wrote lots and lots of cookbooks over the course of his career, but he didn't really explore the world of baking until later in his life. Beard was born in Oregon in 1903, and in 1975, he released Beard on Bread, which is kind of hard to say if you think about it. So he was 72 when this book came out.
I've got a bread in my beard.
Put your beard on the bread.
So in this book, he explores various recipes for bread, standard breads, sweet breads, yeast breads, egg breads, etc. Now, before finding Beard, my best bread recipe was actually one that came with my KitchenAid mixer.
Nice.
You know, very high tech. So it was just a little bit more sour than I liked, so I added a little sugar, and then it was okay, but it still wasn't what I was looking for, so I kept on my quest. Now, I've never tried any other Beard cookbooks, but when I found Beard on Bread, I knew I had to try it. After all, if a food god, little g, like Beard was testing out bread, there had to be at least one good recipe in there, right? So I tried his basic recipe first, which was basically just flour, water, and yeast. It was good, but it was a little bit heavier than I wanted. So then further back in the book, I came across his recipe for county fair bread. It had eggs and milk and butter. And
is that fried butter and like...
It's not fried, but now you've intrigued me. I might have to try it.
Yeah, I've heard of deep fried butter.
Olive bean butter.
A broken Motley Crue mirror in it.
So with county fair bread, it has all the extra ingredients. Plus, you're supposed to braid it so it looks cooler, like you're going to, you know, present it at the county fair. And the first time I made it, I follow the directions exactly, and got this yummy, sweeter, light, but kind of flat braid of bread.
It tastes like a toothless carny.
No, it actually tasted good, because carnies are scary. Small hands.
Small like cabbage.
So since then, I've actually braided the bread, but then I still put it in a pan so it gets nice and high like a regular loaf with a pretty braided top. I've also made cinnamon swirl bread with it, which doesn't last very long at our house.
No, I imagine.
So there are other recipes I want to try. He has one for chocolate bread, pizza bread. He has one for pistachio bread. But I think I found my basic bread recipe, and my quest has thus ended. I have found my holy grail. If you are looking to experiment in the world of bread, save yourself the time and just start with Beard on Bread. You and your family and friends will thank me later. Sarah?
Oh my. I don't know if y'all are ready for this one.
Not ready for this, Jeremy.
We need to drink the boys.
Punish us with it.
Yeah.
Well, allow me to set the scene for this cookbook. The lights are low, except for the light over the microwave.
Oh, yeah.
And a sleek, clean kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Katy Perry's Peacock Song is playing in the background, and it smells like olive oil, garlic, and bacon. That's right, because you're cooking from no ordinary cookbook.
Oh.
This ain't no Betty Crocker cookbook.
What book?
I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it through this. You can do it.
No, wait.
It's setting the perfect scene, though. This book... This cookbook is aiming to satisfy all of your needs
of
chicken.
It's like a really bad Arby's commercial on TV.
I've got all the meats.
That felt more Barry White.
Yes, that's just what I was saying.
Yeah, that's exactly what he sounds like.
Oh, baby, don't, darling, I can't get enough of your love, baby.
Yeah.
All right, well, this is because this cookbook is your 50 Shades of Chicken cookbook.
That's right.
Some genius by the name of F.L. Fowler, like what they did there instead of E.L. James, decided that this world hadn't had enough of the world of Christian Grey yet and thought, what if this series had a parody for chicken? And let me tell you, these recipes will get your oven preheating faster than you can say chicken with a lard on.
What the cluck.
Yeah. That's also one of the recipes, by the way. Instead of Christian Grey, it's Mr. Blades, and instead of Anastasia Steele, it's Miss Hen. The book is broken into three parts, the Novice Bird, which predominantly includes recipes for cooking whole chickens, Falling to Pieces, which includes recipes for chicken parts and bits, and lastly, Birds Gone Wild, and that includes recipes for cooking with advanced techniques. Each recipe begins with a provocative little paragraph to highlight what's coming, plus a photo. Then you get a detailed and somewhat also provocative explanation of the recipe. Here's an excerpt from the book's introduction. How have I gotten myself into this? I glance around the spotless, meticulously organized kitchen, trussing twine, skewers, mallets. Is that a cleaver? Holy crap! I don't even fit in. I share a shelf in the fridge with a ham so enormous I have to huddle up against the door, even though it's a double-sized Sub-Zero. The other shelves are stuffed with bags of leafy greens, neatly wrapped paper parcels of what might be fish or fancy cheese, and uniform rows of carefully labeled condiment jars. Down in a crisper, all by itself is a radish, aloof with it, aloof and flaunting its freshness. Then there's me, mundane, scrawny, and shrink-wrapped. I'm closest with the enormous ham, even though she's so much cooler than I am. She's hogs the shelf, but she's my nearest, dearest friend. She's piquant, smoky, salty, pig-headed, bodacious, and always seems to know what's cooking. She'll make an exceptional holiday dinner.
that's some sweet pork.
Yes, it is. So yeah, this is how the book starts, and it only gets better. I've sadly only cooked from this book once, because many of the recipes are a tad complicated. But there are a few well worth it. For example, the one I tested out this weekend, Bacon Bound Wings, aka Maple Glazed Wings with Bacon.
Ooh.
I'm not ashamed to admit I don't cook very often. Complicated recipes, that is, and I consider a complicated recipe something with more than 5 ingredients. But this one will become a regular in my tiny arsenal. It wasn't hard at all, requiring a few ingredients such as maple syrup, soy sauce, a few garlic cloves, apple cider vinegar, black pepper, and bacon. And chicken wings, of course. You mix the ingredients, add the wings, allow them to marinate in the fridge either overnight or at least 2 hours. Then once you're ready to cook them, you wrap each chicken wing in a small strip of bacon and pop them in the oven for half an hour. I amended the recipe a bit by dripping a little more sauce into the wings before going into the oven and also adding a little brown sugar onto the bacon.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well played.
Yeah.
How come you taste so good?
Sweet. Yep. They came out perfectly, but with a lot of grease. So my only recommendation is to use lower sodium bacon and to wrap them in small strips of bacon and not giant portions of bacon.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Is there a recipe in there for chicken livers?
I have no idea. Okay. I don't think so.
I didn't see when we were looking through.
Yeah, I don't think so.
It is the most erotic part of the bird.
Whoa.
It could be in the bits and pieces part.
It's bits and pieces.
It's my favorite part.
So the library sadly does not have this book, and when I suggested it, I was rejected. So you might have to hit up Amanda over here.
It's a good thing in our library alone exists for all you freaky chicken makers.
Y'all have it. It's worth it, even if you choose to buy it. There's also a 50 Shades of Chicken floating around out there for all your bacon needs. That's right.
I do love the fact how the introduction sort of mirrored the prose. I'm making air quotes here, of 50 Shades of Grey.
Mm-hmm.
Because I actually put myself through that book Oh dear. That I
is it as bad as I've
heard? You know?
It is.
You submitted yourself?
Yes. Oh! Well played. Well played, right. Bill.
Oh.
Yes, I did, and it was a trial. It was terrible.
It was awful.
Torture in the not fun way.
No, yeah. Exactly. I did not enjoy it.
We're going to need a trial to get through this segment, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. On that.
Anywho, so there's cake at the table.
Yes.
Yes. Mike was talking about cake for a minute.
Yes. Hello, everyone. Yes, I have brought the cake. Mm. So today I am talking about Joy Wilson, the author of two cookbooks and also the Joy the Baker blog. I have here her two cookbooks, which have come from my own library. However, they're here at this library and also in ebook format. But anyhow, Joy Wilson is the author of the Joy the Baker blog. And honestly, it's one of the best baking blogs out there. I've cribbed most of my recipes from her, recipes for which I have been shaken down by Southern church ladies.
Shaken down?
Yes.
They're ready. Don't mess with the recipes.
They're not leaving this house.
Yes, you will give me that recipe.
Yes, sir.
Yes, and they will be put into the church cookbook. So that has, so yes. So wow. Recipes that are crowd pleaser. She's a lovely, fun woman. She shares stories and pictures about her life, her travels, and her cat Tron on her on her blog and on her Instagram. She's fun. She actually came to Nashville a few years ago, and I got her to sign my copy of her first cookbook, the Joy the Baker cookbook, 100 Simple and Comforting Recipes, and I took a picture with her. She's a lovely woman. So her both of her books, her first one, Joy the Baker cookbook, and also her second book, Homemade Decadence, irresistibly sweet, salty, gooey, sticky, fluffy, creamy, crunchy treats. Include recipes both from her blog that have been previously published in her blog and also some new ones. So her first book I have here, my copy's annotated and stained. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've made notes and I have little tabs in here. Includes such recipes as brown butter chocolate chip cookies, which... I mean, are my standard cookie recipe, chocolate chip cookie recipe, much like Amanda has searched high and low for a bread recipe. I searched high and low for a chocolate chip cookie recipe. I found it in here. Recipes for peanut butter bacon cookies. We just talked about bacon. Ooh. And also an avocado pound cake, which you think is weird, but it's in fact delicious.
Avocado, I've had avocado chocolate pudding.
Yeah, avocado's good in baking. It's just extra, it's fatty.
Yeah.
Yes, which you know, of course, you need in baking, you need the fat to keep it together.
It's really good.
Yeah. So today I brought a recipe from her second book, Homemade Decadence, and she has several chapters in the book, some for brunch stuff, cookies and brownies and bars, pies and crumbles and cobblers, cakes, and also ice cream. Yes, I have not made any of her ice cream recipes. I was looking again through it last night, like, I gotta do this.
I want an ice cream maker so bad.
I have a great attachment for my KitchenAid.
That's what I want.
It is amazing.
Really?
It works.
Hashtag jealous.
Her brunch, I made a recipe from her brunch chapter. It includes also plenty of recipes for boozy brunch drinks, if you're into that. Some of the standout recipes, which I've made before from this book, are dark chocolate, pistachio and smoked sea salt cookies. Yes, when I first saw that recipe on her blog, I drove that day to Whole Foods to buy shelled pistachios because I had to make it. Also buttered popcorn Rice Krispies treats. Yes, with brown butter, really delicious. But today I brought a recipe I have never made before, a sour cream coffee cake with brown butter glaze. So we have it here on the table. It is a bundt cake with the drizzle on the top. Inside the streusel has a streusel and it is swirled throughout.
So the streusel
has cinnamon and cocoa powder. So I'm going to now make a cut.
Wow. Sour cream is my favorite kind of donut. So.
She is now cutting the cake.
You can see.
Ooh. Go slower.
During this portion of the program, we ate the delicious cake.
So question for you.
Yes, Evan, this
so
one's
she's
done.
Only a baker? She doesn't have any cooking?
No.
No.
She does a lot of savory recipes.
Word.
Mm-hmm. In fact, in Homemade Decadence Alone, her second cookbook, she has a recipe in here for breakfast nachos.
Oh, what does that entail?
Is it like huevos rancheros, but...
Let me see.
But for breakfast, though?
Yes, for breakfast. Nachos for breakfast. It does have meat in it and cheese and all that stuff. As a matter of fact, on her savory recipes, from her blog, I got a recipe for a sweet potato, kale, and coconut milk soup with ginger and turmeric.
Wow.
And it is amazing. In fact, that's one of the recipes that was put into the church cookbook because I was shaken down for it. Like, oh, roasted potato breakfast nachos.
Wow. I see.
Mm. Oh. Mm.
Yes. So
that's the potatoes cool. are the nacho part.
Yes, the potatoes are the nacho part. Yes.
That so, makes sense.
So she has plenty of savory recipes. You can look on her blog. As a matter of fact, she has a recipe that I've seen for a tomato cobbler.
Interesting.
Yes, with like the biscuits on the top. So yeah, she has plenty. Yeah, particularly in the brunch side of things, she has some savory recipes. This one is really her first cookbook is really heavy on her second cookbook, beg your pardon, is really heavy on the sweet, gooey, crunchy, salty stuff. Her first cookbook, however, has more savory things. Here we have a recipe for avocado fries.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
For baked chili cheese fries.
Ooh. Talk dirty
recipe,
to me.
Yeah. We have recipe for coffee bacon.
What?
Yes. She apparently puts freshly ground coffee on and chili powder and brown sugar onto her bacon. Evil robot is nodding.
Mm-hmm. Jam.
Yes. Zucchini and potato pancakes. So she does a lot of great breakfast stuff by the way. I've gotten a lot of great pancake recipes from her, including a carrot cake pancake recipe with fresh pancakes. I am done talking about Joy the Baker and her wonderful recipes, both savory and sweet. We'll now move on to Mike.
Oh.
Enough.
Right.
Now for something completely different.
You know, the boys in the podcast would have brought samples, but that'd be illegal and wrong.
Well,
of our three.
I told Bill we kind of did.
Did we?
I mean.
Are we, you know, we're kind of fresh, I guess. Uncooked.
Exactly.
We're like sushi.
You're the taste testers.
I do enjoy cooking. Why, this very morning I photocopied a recipe for shepherd's pie, but not cottage pie.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a difference.
There is.
Although cottage pie is easier to make because finding lamb is a pain. And I was planning
on... I got hookup.
Excellent. Well, we will talk off pod.
Is her name Mary?
No.
She quite contrary. I was planning on recommending a fantabulous cookbook that you could check out from your local library, but then I realized that I, too, was forgetting the reason for the season.
Dun, dun, dun.
And this would make this Jocktober quite the terror ravesty. That almost worked. I wrote that down. But if a book called Lucky Peach Presents 101 Easy Asian Recipes were to say fall onto your hands, you love it because every dish ever made from it has been quite delicious. But instead, what I'm going to recommend is technically not a horror movie, but more of a black comedy. Although it does share certain ingredients with other things the boys are going to recommend. It's a little movie called Eating Raoul. I think Bill's recommended it before. And the fabled episode that you can search for.
It's Gary from Perth's favorite.
Yeah. I mean, I prefer the episode, but... You know. Paul and Mary Bland are a couple who dream of opening a restaurant, but instead are stuck in jobs they hate. But what they hate even more are some weirdo swingers who live in their building, because this is from 1982. This is still kind of hip, you know. I've heard it's back, but not as hip. Maybe it's the other hip. One night, one of the swingers tries to get it on with Mary, but he is killed by being bonked with a giant frying pan.
Ouch.
Ow. They turn out his pockets and find out that he's rich! Rich, I tell you! The Blands decide that they could kill two birds with one frying pan and get rid of their annoying neighbors and make enough money to open up their dream restaurant. Hooray. Luckily, they'd live in an entire building full of rich swingers who are easy to kill. Eventually, they team up with a locksmith named Raoul, who helps them in disposing of all the bodies that have been piling up. You can guess what happens to him. Spoiler alert. Your enjoyment of eating Raoul depends on whether you like black comedies. It's there's a very cheerful tone to Casual Murder, which may not be for everyone. I thought it was charming. The leads are, you know, good and everything. It was directed by Paul Bartel, who also directed Popmatic favorite Death Race 2000. Mary is played by Mary Warnoff, who appeared with Bartel in 17 movies. I would also recommend What We Don't Have, Chopping Mall, and Night of the Comet. Yeah. Both get my Shocktober seal of approval.
Chopping Mall.
So, what do you have to eat, Bill?
Well, I want to talk about everyone's favorite cannibal, Hannibal Lecter.
Nice.
Hannibal Lecter is a creation of novelist Thomas Harris. Hannibal Lecter first appeared in the novel Red Dragon in 1981. Then came Silence of the Lamb, Hannibal, and Hannibal Rising. Four books in 26 years. Stephen King once said about Thomas Harris, "His writing is something tedious for other authors. To Harris, it's like writhing in the floor in agonies of frustration, because for Harris, the very act of writing is kind of a torment."
Cool.
Hannibal Lecter does.
It is.
Hannibal Lecter does not fit any known psychological profile. He is pure sociopath. He is intellectually brilliant, cultured, sophisticated, and excellent taste in art, music, and cuisine. The cuisine sometimes has the human remains in them from victims he's killed. Nobody's perfect. In 2013, Brian Fuller developed Hannibal, a psychological thriller horror television show for NBC. It lasted 3 years. I'm surprised it lasted that long, because it's totally fresh and original way of looking at the Lecter legacy. The show has a great cast. Hugh Dancy as Will Graham, Mads Mikkelsen as Hannibal Lecter, and Lawrence Fishburne as Jack Crawford. We have all three seasons in our collection, so check them out. Or in the words of Hannibal Lecter, bon appetit.
So there's only three seasons, you said?
They only three seasons.
I'm mad about Mads.
But they're even talking about maybe doing a movie or something, because there is a cult following to the show.
Mm-hmm.
But not enough to sustain the audience for network.
Mm-hmm. That's a shame.
For their Kickstarter campaign, it should have, like, Yes, We Cannibal.
Chianti and fava beans.
Yes.
All right. So food is a sort of a tricky subject for me to talk about. I have a difficult relationship with it. My wife has been vegan for 13 years, and 6 of those years we've also had a kid who's vegan. So like in Pulp Fiction, when Samuel Jackson says that pretty much makes me a vegetarian too or whatever, that pretty much applies to me. I'm basically a vegan except for when I go out to eat. In which case, I devour as much animal flesh as I can. I mentioned chicken livers earlier. I could eat chicken livers from Arnold's Country Kitchen here in Nashville every day of my life until I died from some organ meat-borne illness. I love that stuff, man. It is the
You've been gouted.
Gout.
Yeah, give me the gout. Give it to me. Get gout of here. Get me gout of here.
Gout bound.
Yeah. So instead of talking about food, today I'm going to talk about the lack of food. And since this is Shocktober, I thought there was no better time than to discuss the horror of the Donner Party.
Oh. Wow.
And the book I read is called...
I should just stay out. Yeah, really. I didn't need to come back for this.
The book I read is called Donner Dinner Party, and it's a juvenile graphic novel.
Wow.
And part of a series called...
It's cheery, kids. Everyone's happy.
It is for children.
Kids do love the gross out factor.
That's right. It's part of a series called Nathan Hale's Hazardous Tales, and the writer-artist is named Nathan Hale. And in the book, he uses this framing device. This is maybe the second week or third week in a row I've said the words framing device. He uses this framing device of the American patriot and spy. I regret I've only got one life to live for my country, Nathan Hale. He's on the gallows about to be hanged, and then he's telling stories to this British Army officer and a hangman who's wearing like a hangman's costume. And he's telling them stories.
For
about
like 9 books?
It's a few books, but he's telling them stories of American history, but like going forward in time.
That's
like,
anachronistic.
He can see into the future.
And they point that out, and it's amazing. And it's they interject throughout the book for comic relief, and it really is funny. And because this is a book about the Donner Party, there's a kind of darkness in it. The hangman says, come for the story, stay for the hanging, and it's really funny. It's very funny. So the book follows James Reed and his family. They were members of the group. It eventually became called the Donner Party because there were two groups of Donner families in there. Is there a Donner Party chicken in there?
No, there's whipped livers.
Yes.
Hey. Oh, yeah.
Excellent. eventually became called the Donner Party because the people voted Donner, one of the Donners, the captain of the group. And so it was also called the Donner Reed Party for a while. But they didn't know anything about the television program. So they set out from Springfield, Missouri, and they follow along the Oregon Trail. But James Reed decides to avoid as much dysentery as possible and get off the Oregon Trail and take this shortcut that was supposed to save them 400 miles of travels to California. This did not work out quite the way they planned. So they lose some people along the way. People split off, and then some people go with them when they split off from the train, and some people don't. And so sort of at the pivotal point of the book when they're splitting off the Oregon Trail, there's like this really amazing illustration in the center that shows all of the families and the, how many people they had in their party and how many animals they had with them and stuff. And this is the final group that goes through, they go through the salt flats of Utah, and then they go up into the Sierra Nevadas, and that's when everything kind of hits the fan. And it gives you kind of a small sense of the magnitude of this tragedy, because it is a tragedy. Because there's so much historical distance from it, like it becomes like a punchline in some ways, and whatever. But it is a pretty awful story. The oldest person in the group was 65 years old. The youngest person was, I believe, 2, although there may have been someone that was even younger. And then on their way to... Wow. On their way up to the mountains, 2 people already died. One of them died before they hardly even got on the road. That was the mother-in-law of James Reed. She died just of old age. And then another person died of TB. And then there was someone got accidentally shot, and James Reed stabbed a guy in a fight. So there was a lot of bad...
It was a rowdy party.
There's a lot of bad luck and bad things befalling this group.
I fell on this bullet.
Yeah. So eventually, they are going to go up in the mountains and they're like, we can make it over this pass, but we got to get out of here soon because there's too much snow and we got to get going. And they say, no, we're too tired. We can't go. And then that night, feet of snow fell. Oh, like, there's a ring around the moon. It's going to snow. And that's Indian superstition. And it snows, and then they get stuck up in the mountains. And then people start dying. Their food stores are dwindled. And then eventually 42 people died, and at least 20 of those people were cannibalized. So, and they had to survive. And it's terrifying. The book has a lot of funny moments, but there's a point in the book where the Nathan Hale, who's telling the story, tells the hangman and the other guy, if you don't like gross stuff, skip ahead to page 113. And you can skip all the cannibal parts, basically. And there's still horrible stuff. And there's even a really good gag of the hangman trying to turn the page. No. And then there's a little panel that says, you've gone too far ahead. And so it's really great. It really is. It's historical. It teaches you stuff. It's fun. If I were a child, I would get such a kick out of this. And as a grown child, I got a really big kick out of it. This is one of the most notorious stories in American history, and beyond the sort of grisly details of it, it's also kind of inspiring because they survived the worst possible conditions.
Some of them did.
Basically,
if you're a cook,
if you came from a big family and you were a woman, then you were okay. But pretty much, if you were younger than 5 or older than 50, you were screwed. They also broke the biggest taboo in just about any human culture. Take that, Sade. So if that doesn't encapsulate the can-do American attitude and our legacy as culinary mavericks, I don't know what does. And we brought some samples.
Unfrozen.
Eat of my flesh.
Hey guys.
Hey Jeremy.
Hey Jeremy.
What do I do? I'm talking about pretzel.
Maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's cheap and fancy.
Amanda.
Amanda.
Okay, so I can count on two fingers the number of times I've made something I've seen on TV. I watch a lot of cooking shows, but I just never get around to actually making what they made. Or if I do, I forget, you know, what the recipe, I go find another recipe and I use that instead. But the first time I actually made something directly from TV was when April Bloomfield was on The Mind of a Chef. She was making scotch eggs, which looked really good, but are incredibly hard to make. Now, I had just learned how to make mullet eggs, which are soft-boiled eggs.
Does the shell, like, hang down
off the back? You make them in Kentucky, yeah.
This is in the front, party in the back.
So that's how this dish starts as well. When you peel the eggs, encase it in sausage, roll it in breadcrumbs, and then deep fry it. Now, if it's done right, we're not having that today. Because peeling mullet eggs sucks. It's so hard to keep it together, because it's not cooked, so it wants to keep tearing apart.
It is really hard.
So they actually just had these on MasterChef, and one team didn't even finish because they couldn't get them peeled. And I get it. I've been there.
How unappealing.
Go to shell.
So the second time I made something off TV was this past fall when I attempted Paul Hollywood's Arlette. These were the second technical challenge on season 3 of the Great British Baking Show.
Paul Hollywood?
Was the biscuit episode. That's his name.
Yes, that is his name.
We had multiple cookbooks by him.
So they are a...
Trust me, I know.
Arlettes are a flat French pastry. They kind of look like squashed crispy cinnamon rolls. So I love to experiment and try new things in baking, and these seem like fun. So I'm like, sure, I'll try these for my friend's birthday. So basically you start by making a butter pat, and you make a dough square. And so then you put them in, you chill them. And then usually what you do to make pastry is you wrap the butter in the dough. But in this case, you wrap the dough in the butter.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which is challenging. Then you laminate it several times, which means you roll it out, fold it to make layers, chilling in between.
Yeah, yes. Laminate.
It doesn't mean you run it through a plastic machine.
That's the piece.
No. In baking, that is a laminated dough. When you keep folding the dough over and over again to make layers of layers of butter,
like
of fat,
I made the same
and
way.
The and the pastry and the flour to create the lamination, which means that gives the rise. Croissants are made in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, so yep. then.
I am a baker.
So in this case, then you add sugar and cinnamon and fold it one last time, roll it like a Swiss roll, slice. So when I first time I made it, all this was going to plan. Then I got to the actual baking portion. So I mentioned that this was the Great British Baking Show, right?
Not was everything in grams America? And like... You
know. Yeah, but I have a scale and does grams and that's fine. But
of course.
So here is what the baking directions said. Preheat the oven to 200 degrees Celsius / 180 degrees Celsius fan / gas 6.
What?
Gas 6?
Yeah, I'm like... my oven, what?
Yeah, in England they have different ovens.
Yeah, so I had to do a little bit of research. So 200 degrees Celsius, I had to do math, is about the equivalent of about 350 degrees. Mm-hmm. Then I was supposed to bake them for 5 minutes on each side. So the first time it wasn't a complete failure. They tasted good, but they never got crisp, and they puffed up quite a bit more than I thought they would. I totally would have gotten kicked off the show for that first batch of Arlette.
Get out of here.
They would have.
Cool. No, they're very kind
bugger
about
off.
It.
So... So I did a little bit more research. To fix the baking, I upped the temperature to 350 degrees Fahrenheit, like a normal baker would.
Yeah, that's right, Mark.
And then learned that you should put another cookie sheet on top to keep them from getting too puffy. So you cover them with parchment paper in between. So I also increased the bake time. I've done 10 minutes. Last night I did 8, and that seemed to work. So, and I nailed it, if I do say so.
Nailed it!
My husband loves these. I brought some today to share.
Oh, boy.
So,
although we can't really digress for too long because we got.
I'll keep talking while I pass.
Those are, well done. Those are beautiful. That was a hard challenge.
Yes.
I saw that.
Yeah. So, the only bad part about the recipe is that it makes 8. So you work for 4.5 hours to make 8 cookies.
Whoa.
And I make my husband pace himself so they last more than an hour. And then I take the last one when he's not looking.
Awesome.
If you need a new showstopper for your holiday season, try these. I'll give Evil Robot a link to Paul's recipe. We also do have a recipe in Dominic Ansel's The Secret Recipe Cookbook that is also home of the Cronut. So if you want to check that out, you can. Oh. They are not easy, but they are very, very worth it.
No, Amanda, well done. Yum. You have distinct layers in here, distinct flaky layers
in here.
Are
you sure these got sugar?
They have just a little bit in the filling, that's it.
Mm.
So, I mean, they would be bill worthy.
Mm. Yum, 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 yum.
All right, Sarah.
Well, I'm moving on from food.
Oh,
not permanent.
Okay.
But I rarely watch new shows on local TV stations, but not because I think they're going to be bad or anything, but mostly because I've recently noticed that I tend to hop onto TV show bandwagons after they've been out a bit. I don't really know why. But, of course, there are a few exceptions I can think of. CBS's Scorpion that premiered in 2014 and is still running. Actually, it's about to premiere its third season. Side note there, it's not a bad show. Good if you like puzzles. It's a little cheesy in writing.
But got weird after Jump the Shark after season one.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised it's still going, to be honest.
Yeah, I was too.
The other TV show I watched when it premiered in 2007 was ABC's Pushing Daisies. It only lasted two seasons, but I really loved that show. It was something other than a crime drama, comedy, reality show, etc.
From the creator of Hannibal.
Yep.
Was it? The villain, I did not know that.
Brian Fuller.
No wonder it was so good. But alas, it was canceled. I'm sure there have been other shows I've watched when they premiered if I think hard enough, but my point is that I recently started watching another new premiere, and I'm really glad I decided to. The show This Is Us premiered on NBC a couple Tuesdays ago and has already been ordered for a full season with 18 full episodes. A few people you might recognize that are in the show are Mandy Moore, Milo Ventimiglia, Jess for
is it
all
Jess
you
from the Gilmore Girls
fans, yep.
Or Heroes, he was on Heroes too.
Oh yeah, that's right. And Sterling K. Brown, who's most recently famous from his Emmy win for his supporting role in the People vs. O.J. series.
Don't forget Major Dad.
Mm-hmm. Major Dad, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Gerald McRaney.
Yep.
Gerald McRaney? I'll watch anything with him in it.
There you go. Well,
this is totally your type of show, too, Mike.
Setting up here. Well, before I watched it, I had read about the plot twist at the end of the episode and couldn't help myself. I had to know what it was. But despite knowing the ending, I still say that the writers did an excellent job with the progression of the show. The truth isn't revealed until it's absolutely necessary, and it all clicks perfectly when the realization hits you. It's described as being a dramedy because there is a healthy mix of moments that'll make you laugh and also ones that bring the feels. I'm incredibly curious where this storyline will lead, because if you choose to watch it, you'll understand why I asked this. By comparison, I'd say this show is similar to NBC's Parenthood, though I wasn't a regular watcher of that show. There are elements of each show that are similar, but with This Is Us, there are twists, as I said. It seems like this will be a norm for the rest of the season, too, each episode ending with a new twist, but I'm looking forward to that. Obviously, the library doesn't have this show yet, but I'm guessing at the end of the season it will get ordered, I hope. Till then, you can find it on NBC, Channel 4, if those letters mean nothing to you, at 8 p.m. Central Time on Tuesday nights. Kim?
Yes. So today, I am going back to food, and I'm talking about a place that tickles my fancy this week and every week. It is Aldi. Aldi is the best supermarket on God's green earth.
Preach.
I love Aldi. It is great. So Aldi, for those of you that are not in the know, it is a supermarket chain. It's actually owned by the same people that own Trader Joe's. And Aldi is known as a discount supermarket. But don't let that deter you, because if you don't shop at Aldi, you're bougie and like to spend too much money.
Wow. Call it thrown.
Yes.
Yes. So Aldi, it's actually a German supermarket chain. You go and you put a quarter in your cart so you can't take it off the lot. You bring your own grocery bags, but inside,
I'm out.
There's no fancy displays. So what it is, it's like, you know, it's they have their own in-house brands of a lot of what's in the supermarket, but, you know, it's a much more scaled down. There's no pharmacy. There's no, you know, place where you can get subs or everything.
And,
yeah, a lot of times the things are very seasonal, so if it's gone, it's gone. But Aldi is great because it has their stuff is really high quality and it's at a low price. They're expanding their organic and gluten-free offerings every single day. So that's really great. It's the place where, for example, I can get avocados sometimes for 39 cents each.
Whoa.
What the what?
Dang.
Fresh pineapples for 99 cents. What the what? Exactly. Great. And Aldi's also known also as the land of snacks. So if you want... My brother says I can't go to Aldi because I can't be that fat. But like at Publix, I can't justify being fat, so I don't buy as much snacks. So, but Aldi can be dangerous. So, but for example, you can buy the things, you know, around the holidays, they'll bring special German stuff from Germany. Like, the, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh.
You can get...
yes. Deutschen Essen.
Yes, yes, yes. Like the Speculoos cookies. Nom. You can buy the advent, the chocolate advent calendars. Things that I love at Aldi, for example, there's the... they have their own knockoff Girl Scout cookies, like Samoa's and Thin Mints. And they are...
Yeah. They have regular
soldier cookies or something.
Yes,
and they have regular brand stuff too. Like, it's I think it's the same price as a Walmart.
Yes, exactly. So every once in a while, you'll find regular price stuff, and it's great. Yeah. So go explore. You'll never know what you'll find at Aldi. I've been able to buy sunglasses and. And you know, athletic socks and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's
comforters.
Yes, exactly. Go to Aldi. Stay for the comforted deals. Stay for the surprises.
Don't buy asparagus from a can. I did that. No.
They do have fresh asparagus there, mm-hmm. and they often throw a sale on it, so it's really good. Mike.
Well, I never carry a chain, so that's not happening for me.
I have a special Aldi quarter in my car in the little cup.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
Today for the spooky tickler. I thought I'd talk about the Full Moon Cineplex, which opened up this month in Hermitage. It shows a double feature of horror movies every weekend in October, and you can spend a little extra and have dinner about an hour beforehand. It's like two theaters. I think one theater shows movies, and then the rest of it's like a haunted house deal. And to keep with the cannibal theme, at least with the boys, on October 30th, they're showing the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So you can pay money to be bored and underwhelmed.
Tell that to my wife.
Oh, please.
That's how she married me.
You know, I went there way back on October 7th, which is the future for this now, to finally see one of my favorite movies ever in a movie, in a movie theater, Creepshow.
Stars. And I got my cake.
Oh, my God!
Happy Father's Day.
Oh, Creepshow makes its long-awaited return to the show.
It is Shocktober.
It's the Shocktober, you know.
Shocktober.
Afterwards, I, of course, tore out my own eyes, for the last thing I wanted to ever see was perfection on the big screen. I'm surprised that my podmates haven't mentioned me reading this in Braille, or the wolf-headed cane I now need to get around. Or at least I assume it's a wolf's head.
Empty sockets.
What have you got, person who's to my right?
Well, keeping with Shocktober,
wow.
I'm going to promote my movies at Maine on Saturday, October 22nd at 2 p.m., we are showing the cult movie Night of the Demon.
Just how much do you know about this book that you're after?
Not very much, only that Professor Harrington referred to it in his notes.
A remarkable work. The few men that really understood it learned many strange and terrifying secrets.
Only a few? Is it that hard to understand?
I spent my life trying to decipher it. The ancient sorcerers who wrote it knew their information was far too valuable to entrust to any known language.
I didn't realize what I was asking for.
You don't believe in witchcraft?
Do you?
Do I believe in witchcraft? What kind of witchcraft? The legendary witch that rides on the imaginary broom, the hex that tortures the thoughts of the victim, the pin stuck in the image that wastes away the mind and the body.
Also imaginary.
But where does imagination end and reality begin? What is this twilight, this half-world of the mind that you profess to know so much about? How can we differentiate between the powers of darkness and the powers of the mind?
Now, I know on a lot of the advertisements it's saying Curse of the Demon. It's the same movie. I'm just showing the extended British cut.
Ooh.
So, Saturday, October 27, 2016 at 2 p.m. in our downtown public library auditorium. I also, in conjunction with the movie, I did an interview with the author of cult movies 1, 2, and 3, Danny Perry. I'm very excited about it. Super nice guy, and that should be up on our website shortly. So, what's tickling your fancy?
Gas 6.
What?
That was oven setting.
Oven setting.
Oh, right.
Gas 6.
I forgot he writes down random things we say.
I didn't write nothing down, son. Usually. I got a mind like a steel trap, lady.
Oh, rusty today.
Rusty. Speaking of rusty, tickling my fancy. It's not. It's just a
TMI.
Nice segue. No.
No,
really. Tickling My Fancy this week is season 5 of New Girl on Netflix.
Oh.
Some people can't stand Zooey Deschanel, and that's fine. God bless
really?
You.
Really?
Yeah. I think some people
I think she's totes adorable.
Some folks don't like her. She's kind of maybe my least favorite part of the show, but I think she's wonderful. And that I think she's wonderful, and she's maybe my least favorite part of the show. So there you go. I love this show. I didn't think I would like it. My wife, like years ago when it started, was like, let's watch this show. And I'm like, I don't want to watch that. I don't want to watch that dumb show. And then I watched that dumb show. I was like, this show is not dumb. I love this show. So really great ensemble cast. As my wife said, Winston has really been a shining star this season. That's
about his turn.
Lamorne Morris. He made a joke. He said, Police Navidad, which is really good. Really good. Anyway, it's really great. Every episode, there's at least one moment where we have to kind of stop because we're laughing so hard, and then we've got to rewind and watch the thing again and then maybe do it a couple more times. But the rewind feature on Netflix, on Roku, is kind of bad, so you can end up watching too much of it. Anyway, we don't watch it when it's new because we can't do that. And also, like, who does that? I don't have time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. Anyway, I love this show. Season 5 is great. I hope Jess gets with Nick.
Again? Hasn't she been with Nick?
No spoilers.
They gotta get back together. It has to happen.
It just seemed like writer circumstance that they broke up anyway.
Yeah. I didn't. Wait, you watch that show too?
I've got feelings.
I thought don't judge me.
Yeah, that's right.
That show, I've got a sensitive side.
Yeah.
Corrections! Oh, man. Corrections! Corrections! Corrections.
None.
Oh, wait, I've got some.
Yeah, I can't think of anything.
I received a couple late in the game. From our banned books episode, the clip at the beginning was from the film Storm Center. The clip at the end was the Sonic Youth song Sweet Shine. The corrections for our visual arts podcast, which I guess was our previous episode, the clip at the beginning was Sister Wendy, the nun, the painting nun, discussing the punishment of Marcius by, get this, Titian. It's Titian.
Titian.
No, I was gonna say, how do you say that?
SNL, SNL.
More stuff to be bleeped.
SNL, everybody.
Actually,
SNL.
I remembered a correction.
Oh, okay.
You know? Oh.
Oh, well, okay.
The fourth language in Switzerland is Romansh. But it's descended from Latin, so it's kind of right.
Is it a Romance language?
Kind of right? Okay.
It's descended from Latin. That's what counts.
The clip at the end of the visual arts show was Jello Biafra of Dead Kennedys discussing his obscenity trial on the Oprah Winfrey Show.
Uh-huh.
And then for more Sister Wendy talking about the punishment of Macias by Titian, you can check out the complete Sister Wendy on DVD. Any other corrections?
Negative.
Okay.
Nope.
For more information on painting nuns, you can go to
www.library.org.
Sorry, y'all. I was up late last night.
Just Google Nashville Post.
Just Google it. We'll be there. It's fine.
Just Google it.
Typing is hard.
You probably won't get the library in Nashville, Illinois, but you'll probably most probably get us.
Also, our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
The show was edited by an evil robot.
That's right. You can subscribe to the Popmatic podcast as long as, and you'll get to hear me talk as long as my mouth is pointed toward the microphone. You can do that on iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS next week.
Musical arts.
Yes.
That's right.
Musical.
Music makes the bourgeoisie.
Musical. We're watching your sister in a musical. Bob Berger reference. Shoehorned in.
It's a good show.
Excellent. All right. We'll be right back.
J'ai étudié français pour tout sens dans le lycée. There you go.
Je m'appelle Jenny.
Le sure.
Your name is Jenny.
When I was in sixth grade, my DARE officer thought my name was Jenny, and so everyone called me Jenny. Like, hey, Jenny.
Oh,
nice
no.
breasts, Jenny.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
It's going to ruin a kid for life.
Jeremy spoke in class today.
Jeremy spoke in.
God bless y'all for not doing that all the time.
I'm not that mean.
Yeah, that's
I'll
right.
really mostly be no, Kim
mostly.
Gordon's book.
Kim Gordon's book. Clap.
Amanda, you knocked those Arlettes out of the
yeah,
book.
Yeah, it yeah
was,
very good.
There
very
was
good.
Separate flake. There was definite flaking in there. I'm like, because I've watched a lot of British Baking Show, and I was like looking, you know, like Paul and Mary. Well done.